Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Martinis and Murder.
Are you ready to be murdered?
I'm so ready because we have our murderer back.
That's a very good point. Why don't you tell everyone what's
Hashtag Matt is back, finally. Because last week, we sort of made our concoctatini, which was just everything in Matt's damn office combined together.
Right.
And you probably had, what, 2 sips?
It was literally a couple sips.
Maybe. And normally, I would say on average, we suck down maybe 2 martinis apiece.
Yeah.
Me a little bit faster, probably, than you.
That's true.
You're a little bit of a lighter weight.
Well, look, let me just put this out there.
Yeah.
Before you start dragging me mm-hmm. by my hair.
Mm-hmm. By your ponytail.
I love a good, sweet,
stiff.
Something like that. But, you know, some of the drier ones that are maybe a little less, you know, sweet, I guess is the way I'm saying it, are a little bit tougher. Obviously, as you guys remember,
like bitterness.
Don't like a bitter, like a dry martini. No, thank you.
Right.
But today's martini,
I think you're
going to really
like today's
exciting.
Martini. I'm really excited. Although I did call Matt out because I thought it was going to be something different, and we'll get to why it was going to be.
Let's just say there, as we get into today's murderous episode, there are ingredients used that we could have used for a martini.
There's tons of ingredients that may or may not be good for martinis, and we'll let you figure it out.
There
but
you go.
Today's martini that we're drinking is a chocolate martini. We have 1.5 ounces of chilled vanilla vodka. That'll be good for you, John.
Yes,
I love it. A splash of creme de cacao.
Yeah.
This will surely be better than our cocktail last week, just because Matt's making it.
That's a good point.
And I spilled everywhere.
And also, there aren't 20 ingredients to this
one. Yeah, and like, he's measuring, and I didn't even... Like, if you remember, I poured straight from the bottle last time, and I forgot that the shaker actually has a shot glass on the top of it to, like, measure out. I was just like... So it's like 50 shots.
Here
all right,
come.
And with shaking, I think we should start.
Well, I do think we should also say welcome back, Matt, you know?
Welcome back, Matt. He's finally... I was hoping he wasn't going to come back.
Right, because we wanted to live.
Yeah, and he... By the way, you didn't see, because he's behind you, he just did a little dance when he was shaking that thing. So he's
letting loose. Letting
loose.
He's getting back in the groove here. By the way, we also are recording some video. If you want to see what we actually look like and you've never seen us, head over to oxygen.com because some of our recording today will be there. And there are bright lights everywhere.
And you can guess which one of us is John
and which one's Darren.
It's a toss-up.
Who could it be?
It could be any one of us. Who's Matt? We don't know.
So check those out, by the way. And then let's get into today's crazy story.
Okay, let's preface this whole story because John and I read this probably 1,000 times. The whole title of this has to do with Marjorie Deal Armstrong, if you want to look her up as we go.
Yeah.
But there's so many players involved. It is such an intricate story.
Yeah.
We are going to try and slowly explain it as we go through and constantly remind you of the names. But the overall picture is Marjorie Deal Armstrong.
Exactly. She's kind of the grandmaster.
She's the grandmaster of it all, and you'll find out why. But let's get into it. Yes. So I wanted to start off with this guy named Brian Wells. Okay. Brian Wells was a 46-year-old pizza delivery guy in Erie, Pennsylvania. He was a high school dropout who had been delivering pizzas for 30 years. Mm. I mean, do you think he gets sick of pizza at that point?
Well, just before we even get any further, we should note that no, we did not want a pizza martini.
No, well, we asked for no pepperoni in it. Although you did say pepperoni martini at the beginning, which we both gagged.
Disgusting.
Yes.
So I'm sorry, you asked me a question, though. What did you just ask me?
Don't you think you
sick
get
of
sick
of pizza? Can anyone get sick of pizza? I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. It's like an American staple.
By the way, how many nights have we been drunk together and gotten pizza after we've been out drinking? A couple times.
Probably a lot.
Yeah, probably a lot.
I don't know if we got it from Brian Wells, though. And no. We'll tell you why.
In fact, yeah, we can confirm it was not delivered by him.
On August 28th, 2003, Brian was just finishing his shift when a call came in for two small pepperoni pizzas.
Okay.
I just like that detail.
One for you and one for me.
Exactly.
Got it.
Which Brian offered to take. Again, he was finishing a shift. This was kind of his last run. But the address for the delivery was slightly obscure, I'd say. It was a transmission tower site down a dirt road on the outskirts of town. Hey, homeless people need pizzas too.
Okay, that's a fair point. But
just keep that in mind.
I just find that such a huge red flag in the first place.
Right.
Because I'm like, what? What delivery place is like, yeah, there's a weird transmission place down by the the dirt road. Why don't you take a couple pizzas there,
right,
guy?
And, like, did he MapQuest it? Because in 2003, there wasn't, like, an iPhone with a GPS.
No.
So what, he MapQuest it. So it's like, all right, go down this dirt road.
That's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about
that. How did
he
find
that? Yeah.
Later that same afternoon after delivering the pizza. So, okay. Yeah. I'm going to walk this story slowly.
Yeah, one step at a time.
Delivers the pizzas.
It gets really crazy, you guys.
So hold on him delivering those pizzas to the tower for a second.
Later
that afternoon, post-delivering these pizzas, Brian walks into a PNC bank. He's walking with a cane, which is a really important note to keep in your back pocket for later, you know, like a walking cane.
Sure.
He lined up for the teller as any person in the bank normally would. This seems quite normal.
Very typical.
Brian was wearing a second T-shirt over his own T-shirt with the word "Guess" spray painted across it, which is fairly weird.
Yeah.
Other than that, everything else seems to be perfectly normal.
Sure, so far.
That is, except under his shirt, there was a large protrusion, which witnesses said they thought might have been a medical apparatus for a neck injury, which does happen, like a life alert.
Right.
Like, that's fully possible.
And
I've seen,
like,
those. They do protrude.
Are you happy to see me, or is that a protrusion under your shirt?
Or is that a heart monitor?
Yeah, exactly.
It was his turn at the teller, Brian handed the teller a note saying the protrusion wasn't a neck injury device.
Oh.
It was actually a bomb.
A bomb.
Casual.
All right.
So the same note that said it was a bomb asked for $250,000. Keep that figure kind of in the back of your mind because it's going to come back later.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
So $250,000.
Here are drinks. We need a picture
Matt
of this.
Matt actually, he was worried about getting the, it's mashed up just dark chocolate, milk chocolate, Matt. Right? It's mashed up, and he was worried about getting it on the side, and I don't know how he got it on the
it
side
looks
of the
amazing,
rim, but he
yeah.
did. You taking a picture?
I am, really.
With
quickly.
A Hershey Kiss in the center. Let's cheers, bitch.
Cheers. We're back, the three
Matt,
of us.
Matt, we're so happy to have you back.
Don't smash.
Cheers, bitch.
Our chocolate's smashing together so we couldn't clink.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Delicious.
Might be my new favorite. Mm.
My dentist is going to hate me, but I don't care. As will my liver doctor or whatever.
As will everyone.
That is
yeah.
so good. I want another little
that
piece of
really
chocolate.
That is really good. Because, again, we still have the lights going on with the video. And the refreshing taste of creme de cacao.
Yes. And I was
perfect.
Hoping this was going to be like a freezer or frigid martini, and that will also come into play later. Okay.
Okay, back to the protrusion.
So Brian gives a note to the teller and is like, hey, it's actually a bomb around my neck, and tells the teller, we want $250,000, which the teller said they just couldn't get. They didn't have
sure.
the money there. So Brian then asked them what they could give him. The teller gave him over $9,000, and Brian just left.
Okay.
But he didn't just leave. This is a really funny detail. He made sure to grab a free lollipop that they give at the teller station. One of those dum-dum lollipops, I'm sure, which you have a bomb strapped to you.
Yeah, let's
you know,
discuss
like,
this.
You just robbed a bank, and you're just like, you know what? I am going to get a fucking lollipop.
It makes me wonder if he himself... You know, we'll talk about more details later, but just the thought, did he know that this was an actual bomb. Maybe I wonder if someone jumped him and said, no, this isn't a real bomb, but tell them it's a real bomb so that.
Or like, did he strap it to himself? Like, we don't know anything at this point. All we know is like, because homeboy's coming in with a Guess shirt on.
Right.
And eating a lollipop and asking like, for $250,000.
And by the way, what's with the Guess shirt? But my thoughts are, your mind must be so relaxed if that the one thing you wanted to capture besides that $250,000 you didn't just get is a lollipop.
Right.
Then things seem to be pretty chill.
Maybe he was just happy it wasn't pizza.
That's a good point.
So he's like, thank God, I haven't had anything but pizza in 30 years.
For 30 years. I was just going to say that. Ooh, dumb, here we go.
So as this is going on, keep in mind this is 2003. Yeah. Customers in the bank begin dialing 911 as soon as possible. And Brian, he drove off in his beat up car, and he only made it a few hundred yards before state trooper pulled him over. So that's a very quick response.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
A few hundred yards, unless it was a little jalopy and it like could barely move. That's very quick.
Yeah, for sure.
Brian was immediately handcuffed with his hands behind his back, but told the troopers he had a bomb around his neck. He told them the details that he'd been jumped while delivering pizza. So really good call.
Yeah.
At that obscure address down that dirt road that we had said. The troopers left him sitting down on the pavement and called the bomb squad. Mm. Brian started panicking, as you think you would, with a bomb attached to your neck, asking why no one was taking the collar off of him. The bomb was attached to his neck like a large handcuff, sort of like a necklace around that he just couldn't get off, saying he saw the person who put it there start a ticking timer, and indeed, the collar was beeping.
So, I mean, to me, this is so...
It's such a movie.
It is a movie. Yeah, we'll get to move. It actually is a movie, but we'll get to that.
But it does seem like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
It's just like insane to think that this series of events could play out like this in real life. You know what
I mean? It's always like, if you ever watch anything in TV or read about it, it's like the red wire, the blue wire, you know, time sick. And I was thinking of that.
MacGruber.
Exactly.
Explosions.
MacGruber. but the troopers weren't sure if it really was a bomb or a ruse. I mean, this was sort of an interesting, weird situation. They didn't know. And also, police aren't necessarily trained to just detonate or get rid of a bomb in any sort of way. So they needed special people to come in.
Right.
Brian waited like that for about 25 minutes with this bomb across his neck just ticking away. At exactly 3:18 p.m. that day, the device stopped beeping.
This is where it gets crazy.
What happened next was mind-blowing, literally.
Pun intended.
Pun intended. It exploded.
Yeah.
It killed Brian and left a 5-inch gash in his chest. If you can, like, just stop and picture that for a second. Like, this bomb is attached around his neck. 5-inch gash in his chest is...
Ugh,
absolutely terrible. The bomb squad, unfortunately, were just minutes away, but the TV film crews, were already there and rolling, which is really impressive because this is really before social media.
That's
true. Normally, you know, how many, you know, hit and runs do we see on cell phone cameras or even murders being, you know, Facebook live stream, people being beaten?
Yeah.
This is pretty insane for film crews to be there even earlier than
the bomb
squad.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I can't really think of how that works. Like, how on earth did a rolling news coverage happen, like,
right,
quickly?
Like, how would they know about it unless someone was – like, I don't know how this chain of communication kind of went down.
Right. And so I personally, like, can't watch these types of things. They really kind of bother me. Now, we know that you did watch this with Matt.
Well, so
and,
we're in the pre-production meeting,
tell everybody
and Matt's like,
how it
happened. You can see it. You can watch it. He's like, do you guys want to watch it? Because
that's immediately
a sick human being.
He is. That's
He's
true.
He's so sick.
So I screamed no.
And you still said no. And I was like, absolutely. I jumped from my seat and I watched it. And then as soon as it lasts like, you know, 5 seconds. And then as soon as it ended, I was like, wait, let's watch it again.
Well, you jumped a little bit and then you said, let's watch it again.
Well, because,
and I was like,
and not in
like
some
happening?
Weird, sick, twisted thing, because if you think about it, it's so sad.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I think
I
it's important to say that.
Yeah.
And the video is pretty grainy. It's not like it's not like it has a front row shot of his head. He's kind of far away and it's a little blurry, but you do see him handcuffed behind his back. He's sitting on the ground, and right before the bomb goes off, he kind of starts scooting away, you know, like you have something attached to your neck, you know, you want to move as far as possible.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see it struggling, and then just boom.
Oh my God.
It's a pretty horrific sight.
Is this on YouTube, by the way, or some other website?
It's some other website, right, Matt? Where did we watch it?
Live Leak
or something.
Okay.
You can watch it. It is pretty disturbing if you have a weak stomach in any sort of way. I don't recommend it. Mm. I had to see it for myself just to see if it was real.
Well, this is part of your job here on the show.
It is part of my
job. You know, this is 2003 before viral videos, Facebook Lives, and everything you just mentioned were even a thing.
Yeah.
So the fact that here we are all these years later and it's still disturbing, it's, I think, really speaks to how difficult it is.
And it also is... You know, remember, he had his hands cuffed behind his back and he's sitting there Indian
style. Couldn't do anything.
He was so helpless. And once you find out about the rest of the story, which we'll get to, it makes it just even worse to know about everything that went down.
And also, can you describe in the video where the police were? Because weren't the police kind of like in a circle away from him?
Yeah, they're not really near him. And they weren't sure really at this point, because the bomb squad hadn't got there, whether or not this was a real bomb or not. So they're
just staying away,
but they're also not trying to, you know, deactivate it at the same time, because no one's really sure of what's going on.
Totally.
So it was just, it was a really, really crazy sight. And I can't believe TV crews were there to film it.
Oh, God. I mean, that's like the worst thing you could ever capture.
It was, it's like a movie. It's like this Saw movie is that I thought of.
Yeah, I think of so many different movies. So let's talk about how the police investigated this situation.
Okay.
So remember the cane that we mentioned earlier in the episode? Well, police discovered it in Brian's car and realized that it was actually a handcrafted gun. So he's got some like penguin from Batman type of shit going on here. You remember how the penguin's umbrella was always like either a gun or like a rocket launcher?
That's exactly what I thought.
So basically the penguin was going on here.
Did you see a picture of this on,
on
Wikipedia?
No, I didn't know there
it's
was
one. It's actually really interesting and, to be honest, looks just like a cane. Like you wouldn't, the handle of it does look like a gun, but since your hand's wrapped around it, it's completely innocuous.
Oh my God.
You really wouldn't know, to be honest with you.
It's terrifying. There are also handwritten notes with elaborate instructions in his car here. One reading, quote, "There is only one way you can survive, and that is to cooperate completely. This powerful booby-trapped bomb can be removed only by following our instructions. Act now, think later, or you will die," is what this note said.
Oh,
the notes led Brian on a bizarre scavenger hunt, giving him time extensions on the bomb exploding for each step completed. And that really kind of thought
such a movie.
Well, it's like, how were they able to like remotely add time to his bomb? Like, to me, there's just so many layers of like planning and kind of like movie level, Hollywood level preparedness.
Yeah. We'll have to ask Matt how he creates his bombs.
That's a good point.
And
let us know
we'll
in
get,
an after
like,
show.
Yeah, we'll get
bonus
reference
content.
There. Yeah, bonus content.
Let us know how you kill people.
But there must be some remote control, I'm imagining, like some engineered thing where you can kind of...
I'm sure, but even... I know 2003 wasn't that long ago. It seems a little early.
We're like, it's the Stone Age. Do they even have electricity in 2003?
But it does seem a little early to be doing like remote control bombing. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know.
Well, clearly you're wrong.
Yeah. By the way, won't it be funny? What's that, Matt? Their children?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we were.
We were in high school, yeah.
I was 15.
Yeah.
Oh.
Matt loves when we mention how old we were when he was...
Because Matt's ancient. We're lucky Matt's alive right now, people.
By the way, we talk about him killing. Won't it be really crazy when we're called as witnesses when he actually kills somebody? And we have all these shows of martinis
he
and murder.
He beats someone with his cane because he's so old. But the cane is just a cane. It's not a gun. It's just a cane.
Right.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Anyway, if you're thinking this sounds too much like a movie, that's because it is. I don't know if you guys have heard of the movie 30 Minutes or Less.
Danny, I haven't seen it, but I heard about it.
Yeah, Danny McBride, Jesse Eisenberg, and Aziz Ansari pretty much follows the same story. There's also an episode of Black Mirror that is similar, and you love Black Mirror.
You know I love Black Mirror.
You should watch this episode.
I will. Wait, didn't you also say it was kind of like that movie Speed?
Yes.
I never saw it, but I remember you guys talking about it.
Okay, I loved Speed when I was like in fifth or
sixth
grade.
Speed the movie.
And it featured Sandra Bullock, not yet Oscar winner Sandra Bullock, and the always beautiful Keanu Reeves, who I saw in an elevator once and he smiled at me.
I remember that.
Yeah. So anyway, Brian had given police little details before he obviously blew up,
right,
aside from his name and his place of work, and that the accusation that someone had set him up. The police went straight to Mamma Mia's pizzeria where Brian worked, and his coworkers expressed sincere doubt that Brian would have been able to make a bomb himself. An acquaintance said he, quote, wasn't very ambitious.
I mean, home dude just died. And you're like,
dragging him.
He's been a pizza guy for 30 years. No way he could create a bomb.
Well, and also, I think it's fair to say he wasn't very ambitious if you've been a pizza guy for 30 years. Look, if that's your ultimate career goal, then
speaking ill of the dead, though, is not going to be good for us.
That's a good
point.
In
the long run.
Yeah, we don't need to be haunted martinis and murder.
Exactly.
The police traced the call for the two pepperoni pizzas to the transmission tower site and found Brian's shoe impressions and tire marks there. So they also discovered that the phone call had been made from a Shell station near the towers, a gas station.
Right.
But that's where the trace went cold. Investigators turned their attention to the bomb. FBI analysis found that the bomb was not amateur work. It was very well designed. They found that the bomb was indeed initiated before Brian walked into the bank, and it had a built-in timer, as we mentioned, and had a booby trap that would trigger it. Again, all this stuff we kind of just reiterated, but
right.
FBI confirming it. The booby trap was a wire mesh that was connected to the bombing mechanism so that if anyone attempted to remove it, it would explode.
That's pretty intense. That's, yeah. That's very
again,
intricate.
Another layer of like severe Hollywood level details.
Right.
Jerry Clark, an FBI agent, described it as a, quote, killing machine, because there's really no way out of it. Once you set it, you're done. Or rather, it's done, whoever it's attached to.
So it's like you're eating a pepperoni pizza, one pepperoni falls off onto your chest, you're
dead. The pizza explodes. Exactly.
You're dead.
Unfortunately, there was no DNA or fingerprint evidence on the bomb that could link it to its maker. The FBI thought one possible scenario was that the maker was a shop teacher with a background in electronics and had a workshop at their house, I guess because it was so well put together that
right.
the only way you could access this would be, or to make this would be to use tools.
And have that equipment.
Exactly.
I actually thought electrical engineer because, or chemical engineer, because this just seems so intricate. And I took shop in my high school.
I did too. Thank you very much.
I made a pencil holder, which my mom still uses. Thank you very much.
I made a wooden boat.
Excuse me.
In fact, I had to make a wooden boat that would race, and mine came in dead last.
It sank.
Yes, exactly.
It had mesh wiring, so if you didn't win, it would explode.
Exactly. Thank you. So let's get into,
Marjorie,
we mentioned Marjorie at the top of the show. Let's talk about how she plays into all of this.
Yes, because she is sort of the piece of every single piece of this puzzle. She really holds
the
everything together.
Yeah.
So Marjorie Deal Armstrong was born in 1949. And lived in Erie, Pennsylvania all her life. She was an only child to two parents who ran a successful awning business. Marjorie was considered a child prodigy, was good at music, graduated at the top of her class with a high school with a high IQ. She also excelled at college and got a master's degree. She was also very beautiful, and we were looking at pictures of her before. She seemed like sort of a classic beauty with pearls and very movie
beehive hair,
very movie star-esque. I mean, if I had said this person was famous and famous in a good way, You would have agreed with me.
She looks gorgeous. Yeah. I think it's another example, you know, I keep mentioning this every episode, of another high performing student and human being connected to a murder. We haven't gotten to exactly how she gets there yet, but it's worth noting.
Well, I mean, and once you know all the details of this case, just remember that she is very smart, because it does kind of take a mastermind to pull this whole thing off.
Yeah. And also about when we get to like verdicts and things like that.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, she was a high performing, high IQ person.
Yes.
Here we go.
In 1984, Marjorie had a boyfriend, Robert Thomas.
Not
Matchbox 20 Robert Thomas, who, by the way, Matt didn't even know.
Matt had no idea.
And he goes,
who
oh,
were
these cool? Was this a cool band? My Matt voice?
Do you think that? Yeah, that's
was
a
really.
Was
this really hip with the kids? No, Matt, shut up. Was no one cares really what you hip? Think. Oh, I really liked it.
By the way, is Matt a time traveler? Like, how? It seems like.
Matt, shut up. Stop participating. You know?
One minute he makes himself seem like he's so old, but then he doesn't know Matchbox 20.
Right. He's like, oh, guys, I went to a cool concert last night. We're like, shut up, Matt. Like, no one cares. It's every week.
He's cackling in the background.
He is cackling. He went home. He went to listen to Matchbox 20. Okay.
I wish we could sing Matchbox 20, but the lawyers won't let us.
Lawyers. And no one wants to hear us butcher it.
Not at all.
So she had a boyfriend, Robert Thomas, not Matchbox 20, as we determined. Who she shot 6 times and killed.
Oh.
Totally normal.
Normal.
Totally
nothing to
cool.
see here. Let's move on.
There actually were murder charges against her, but she was ultimately found not guilty on the grounds that he was allegedly violent and abusive towards her.
Okay.
So that's just an important detail, not necessarily to this case, but kind
background.
Of just giving a little background of who she is. Again, found not guilty of that murder, but did shoot him 6 times. in the course of investigating the crime, this is where the martini recipes really come in handy,
that's
I think.
That's true.
In the course of investigating the crime, 400 pounds of butter and more than 700 pounds of cheese, nearly all of it rotting, of course, because this is not a Whole Foods market, were found inside her trash-strewn house.
Yes.
If you couldn't guess, she was a little bit of a hoarder.
I would say 700 pounds of cheese is a good indication you're probably a hoarder.
Yeah, she was grappling with some severe mental illnesses as well. And when we were talking about this and we mentioned the cheese and butter, we were like, oh, that's like our house. Except, as I said, it would not have been rotting because we would have eaten it before it rotted.
No, you and I are known to have 700 pounds of cheese at our whim.
It's a different mental illness that we have.
In fact, one of the first things that we kind of, you and I became friends, was our affection for cheese.
Oh.
Yeah.
And remember when we were talking about cheese with Matt?
Yes.
And Matt was like, all I eat is cheese. He's like, I'm 100% cheese. I'm 98% cheese, 2% water.
And I can confirm this because Matt once gave me some cheese knives.
We can confirm.
Which may or may not have once been weapons. I don't know. We'll find out
know.
In a future episode.
I hope you wash them before cutting into a slice of Swiss.
Yeah, there's like DNA.
Okay. So obviously, the investigators are checking out her house. Clearly, you know, she has some sort of mental illness. If you're a hoarder and have 700 pounds of cheese, I mean, I don't even know what that quantity would look like.
Well, Darren, I hate to interrupt you, but Matt did just send in a note, and I think it's worth mentioning here. He says, we just got a production note. He says, I will have you know that I'm most likely cooler than both of you. My first concert in the 7th grade being Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols and the Psychedelic Furs. No idea what any of that is. You probably do.
I think we justify this whole thing by not commenting.
Thank you for your input,
you know what
Matt.
I think
we
you,
have
Matt.
A show to do
really
here.
Really appreciate it, Matt. Thank you.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Yeah, exactly. This is when he puts himself. Okay.
Keep those production notes coming, though. I think
it'll
be
fun. They're hilarious. Yeah. So Marjorie moves on to a new boyfriend, post-Rob Thomas. His name is Bill Rothstein.
Yeah.
Important to keep in mind because it's – because he's a genius. He was in Mensa. If you don't know what that is, that takes an insane IQ to sort of get into Mensa. We're showing his picture right now. And the picture that we're showing in our little video that we're recording right now, I would say he's very Santa Claus-esque. He has a white beard. He's wearing overalls,
and by
glasses.
The way, the picture of him being like, hey, I don't know what any of this is, with police tape all behind him. Like, what exactly is happening
in
this
photo? And he's in Mensa. So, like, you know, homeboy's
another
thinking about something.
High-performing human being.
He was Marjorie's high school sweetheart, Bill Rothstein was, and they got engaged in their 20s, but unfortunately it didn't last. After Marjorie broke off the engagement, she really began struggling with her mental disorders, including bipolar and depression, which I could only imagine is tough to deal with one of those alone, let alone having both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
At 41 years old in the year 1990, I was 2.
I was 4.
So Matt can reference this. We'll Matt was 35.
Matt was from another generation, so he might have been 3,000.
Matt lived, died, came back again.
I'm sure we'll get a note from him here in a second. Keep going.
I'm sure. He's like, I'm only 36. At 41 years old in the year 1990, she married her next serious boyfriend, Richard Armstrong, who she called her one true love.
Okay.
Okay, so just to recap everything.
Yeah.
Rob Thomas is dead, found not guilty, shot 6 times.
Right.
She had Bill Rothstein, who she liked, got engaged, didn't work out.
Okay.
Now she's seeing this guy, Richard Armstrong, who she called her one true love.
Rob Thomas, Matchbox 20, still out there doing something.
Still making music that Matt doesn't listen to.
As far as we know.
However, after only 2 years in 1992, Marjorie was rushing Richard to the hospital with a serious head injury. He died of an internal brain hemorrhage. Marjorie said he had fallen, and the coroner corroborated. Well, coroner corroborated is a tough,
that's a tough
double
back-to-back
thing to say.
Word, yeah.
The death was accidental.
Yeah.
There was no further investigation. So actually, we don't really know. I know if you're thinking out there that maybe this was some sort of weird thing because of the Rob Thomas thing. It actually was proved to be accidental, so that's all we can sort of go on, but he did pass away. Marjorie was apparently devastated by the death, and despite settling for $250,000 with the hospital in a medical malpractice case, Marjorie began to struggle even more with her mental illness. As one would, right. She stopped taking her medicine, and her symptoms grew even more noticeable. She was easily agitated, unfocused, and overly emotional. Eventually, she wasn't even able to work. Marjorie was considered disabled due to her psychological condition and got disability payments from Social Security on top of the hospital payout and help from her father, who bought her a house.
And keep in mind that there seems to be a lot of financial... what's the word I'm looking for here? Connections to this situation, which I think as we get into looping in the end of this episode is something that you should keep in the back of your mind. That's just my personal opinion about her and this case.
Yes,
just
exactly.
The financial.
No, that's a good point.
All these payments are coming in, the $250,000 settlement, you know, things
it
to keep in
mind.
It
almost is like she couldn't support herself, really. I mean, this
something
is someone who's going
sense.
Through a tough time. So living in the house that her father bought her, as I said, Marjorie soon shacked up with James Roden. Would you say Rodden or Roden? I would say Roden.
I'd say Roden.
Okay.
Sure.
James Roden, R-O-D-E-N, an unemployed alcoholic. They lived together for 9 years without anything sort of going down. They were reclusive in their own way. They kept to themselves.
And 9 years is a long time, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know. No disturbances.
Yeah, no random deaths. She didn't shoot anybody, so that's good.
As far as we know,
as far as
she did
we
not.
Know.
The neighbors described them as actually very reclusive, keeping to themselves. Indeed, Marjorie would only leave the house one night per week on garbage pickup night. She'd scour the neighborhood looking for things on the side of the road to add to her hoarder collection.
And by the way, you know, I'm a recluse who only leaves my house to come to work. So
right.
Do my neighbors think I'm secretly a murderer potentially? I don't know.
I don't think they secretly think it.
They believe it.
Yeah, I don't
Got
think
it.
It's a secret.
Okay, they've contacted
you. They've tweeted
you.
Me
okay.
many times. thank God we have HR here.
Yes, thank you.
But then Sunday in August of 2003, the peace would be disturbed when Marjorie's neighbor heard gunshots coming from the house.
So I spoke too soon.
Which you spoke too soon. Remember, she's living there with her boyfriend, Richard Armstrong.
Right.
9 years. All of a sudden, gunshots.
Right. Everything was going fine. Never really heard from these people. And then gunshots.
And then gunshots.
All right. So how does all of this connect? So on September 21st, 3 weeks after the robbery/bombing, the police received a phone call. A man's voice is on the phone and he says, quote, I have a dead body in my freezer. Now, you and I might have things like ice cream.
Right.
Ice to make our martinis. This guy has
Charleston chews.
Charleston chews is a good thing to put in the freezer. This guy had a dead body in his, so something worth noting.
Yeah.
The caller was Marjorie Deal Armstrong's former fiancé, Bill Rothstein.
Yes, remember, he was the one that
the
engagement
pants.
Didn't really work out. He was in Mensa. He was the Santa Claus-looking guy I described.
That night, Bill went to the police station for questioning and explained how he and Marjorie had been friends for years and that they would often call on him. And that she would often call on him for help, which is how he ended up with a dead guy in his freezer. Bill said that 6 weeks earlier, again, that's 3 weeks before the robbery/bombing, Marjorie had called him in a panic saying that she had shot and killed her boyfriend, James Roden.
So that's the gunshots that probably happened after 9 years.
Thank you. You're actually really putting this together very nicely. I like that. After an argument, she allegedly shot him twice with a 12-gauge shotgun.
Okay, so
this is making sense. Spoke too soon about the shooting.
Yes.
Bill said he went to Marjorie's, wrapped the body in tarps, and dragged it to his van before taking it home and putting it in the freezer. He also helped Marjorie get rid of the gun, sawing it into pieces and melting it down with a torch. Now, you know, One time I bought my ex a drink at the bar when I ran into him. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd ever go as far as... Yeah, I know, right?
I think that's the question we're all wondering.
I would never go as far as move a dead body to a freezer for him. Would you? What's as far as you would go for an ex?
I mean, I would think anything past like, oh, I have a dead person in my freezer. I think that would like just be... I'm a very low-key...
That's true.
Not high-maintenance girl.
Yeah,
but I think if someone called me... Also, all of my exes except one are women, and I don't think they have the capacity to do that. So I am very strong, so I could see them calling upon me.
Yeah, that's true.
But if they were like, oh, I have a dead person in my freezer, I'd be like, but what else do you have? Do you have pizza?
Do you have pizza? Because I'm not
coming... Or making DiGiorno? What's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, a DiGiorno.
I know, but we can't call Brian Wells because he's dead.
Right. Oh, right.
Right.
Well, it's DiGiorno. It's not
it's
delivery.
It's not delivery. Good call.
Okay, that's kind of inappropriate, but let's keep going. The pair had planned to chop up James's body as well, but Bill apparently couldn't bring himself to do it.
That was just
too much. He, you know, despite pressure from Marjorie and eventually call the police, you know, I'll help you move a body around into a freezer and a tarp.
I'll save your ass to the point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm not going to chop it up.
Well, the police went straight to Bill's house, and they found Marjorie there, sitting on the bed. When the investigators told her who they were, she went berserk, according to the state police supervisor, Lamont King, screaming at them to get out of the house. Officers had to restrain her, and they found James's body in the freezer, as described. The police arrested Marjorie for the shooting.
Got it.
But here's where everything starts to make sense regarding the bomb. Because remember, many people have died already this episode, but we want to get back to the bomb, which was like the craziest part.
Which is how we
part.
Started the yeah. episode in the first place.
While recovering James's body, investigators realized that Bill's house was less than 500 yards from where Brian Wells made that last delivery, right under the transmission tower down the creepy back road that he could not MapQuest in 2003.
That's too coincidental not to be.
Absolutely.
Something sort of related if you're thinking about it. I mean, if it's down a dirt road, this guy is... Less than
500
like football
yards.
Fields away.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. That night, Marjorie refused to talk with investigators, but Bill was very chatty. He told investigators he was, quote, the smartest guy in the room. Okay.
Which, let me say...
Could be true, right? He was in Mensa or
if
whatever.
If you're feeling that sort of cockiness...
Yeah.
A lot of these cases that we've been reading about are things that I just see in the news. It's like, this is always people's downfall. When
yeah,
they
that's
think
true.
They're smarter than investigators, and it's like... This one quick thing, you know, did you ever watch The Jinx on HBO?
With Of course.
Okay, so it's like a Robert Durst thing, and then all of a sudden, the
microphone,
hot, and boom, like, you don't...
Next thing you know, you're belching up the confession,
yeah,
you know?
I did it on the toilet.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes, I think that's worth mentioning. He could have been the smartest guy in the room, but he ended up reeling off his impressive educational resume, including his degree in electrical engineering, and that he was a substitute teacher with the Erie school system specializing in robotics. This is all starting to make sense, right, with this bomb situation, robotics.
He was clearly a shop/... You know, electrical engineer capable of doing
some things. Yeah, you could make a connection here, in my opinion. By bragging, Bill willingly admitted to police he fit the exact profile of their bomb maker that they were looking for. As we had mentioned,
it kind of makes
sense. When the police questioned him about the bombing and the robbery, Bill claimed not to know anything about it, but his arrogance yet again got in the way. The police would ask him questions like, "How do you think the bomb maker would make this device? How would he make the pipe bombs?" And Bill would reply with, "Well, hypothetically, right? You know, kind of making sure
he's..." Well, I would make it like this.
Exactly. And proceed to give instructions for bomb making that were precisely right for the way that the bomb that killed Brian Wells was put together. So, hypothetically speaking, this guy knew how to create the bomb that blew up this guy. I mean, come on. This is insane. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that O.J. Simpson book, If I Did It.
I just watched the Ryan Murphy series last night, and I thought of this exact thing.
Oh, really?
This exact thing. I started
Same
watching
situation.
It.
Was it good?
Yeah, because it's like you get so cocky that you can sort of elude.
When you escape,
when you think about escaping. Yes, Matt, I do need another one. He's looking over here. I'm like, oh, my God.
Another martini for
on
you?
On top of it.
I know, right?
He takes a vacation, and he's like, ridiculous. But I thought of this exact thing, like, you get overly confident, you get overly cocky, like, your best defense, if you're not guilty, is the truth.
That's a good point.
To be yourself, and it is the truth. If you start thinking that you can allude and you're smarter. Yeah. Like, you're just going to tip off everyone else, exactly. as we've clearly seen.
Yeah. The next day, police went to search Marjorie's house. As a hoarder, she had things stacked from floor to ceiling. It smelled very bad, apparently.
Ugh.
It took more than 4 days, 8 detectives, and a garbage truck to clear the house, filling at least 6 dumpsters of things that she owned and had in her place.
Is this Sandy Cohen's office? Oh, no. It's just Marjorie.
Interesting. Some background as we get another martini coming. I've seen Andy's office. There's quite a lot of stuff in
there.
Hey,
it took a long time. But I was just one person.
Well, does he have 700 pounds of cheese? If so, why aren't we recording in there?
If he did, I would have taken that thing home. Put it in my freezer.
That's true. It turned out to be worth it, though, because investigators found 2 ads in the paper circled by Marjorie a few days before James's murder. They were for shotguns, and after some investigation, they discovered that one of the sellers confirmed selling a gun to Marjorie and Bill.
So it just goes to show, don't write on your newspapers.
Right. I mean, it's kind of hilariously...
Right.
Like, how, I mean, you're circling the ad for the gun.
If you've ever seen, and I don't know, this is just my sort of speculation, but if you've ever seen Hoarders,
yes,
the TV
I love
show,
that show. Yeah.
They always have like 4 million newspapers. I'm curious just to how they found just one.
Round
Thank
two
so much,
for you
Matt.
Coming right up.
How they found.
That's true.
This one circled, because I would just throw everything away.
Me too,
is why we're not investigators, and we're just like, oh, it's so dirty. Let's just throw it away when it would have been keyed
and
evidence.
And I thought the same thing. Like, did they literally sift through every tiny little thing they would have had to.
Oh my God. That would have been insane.
It's pretty impressive that they can even do that and then make a connection, you know?
Absolutely.
Okay, so after that, investigators are convinced Marjorie had something to do with the robbery or bombing. Thank you, Matt, for round two. Let me just take a quick sip because it's
your
nice
whistle.
And chill.
What? Mm. Whistle.
Yes, that's a good point. I need to make sure my craft is available here.
Yes.
To do with the robbery. Okay, but things took yet another turn when Marjorie was found mentally incompetent to stand trial by the court in 2004.
And clearly she did have issues. Like, that's not even...
Sure.
Like, she obviously had something going on.
Yeah, something was happening here. That means that anything she said might not be able to be used in court. Now in a state mental hospital, Marjorie's testimony against Bill would be useless.
Right.
Shortly after, Bill was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Ugh.
So lots of sad things happening here. But by July 2004, investigators tried to get a confession from Bill on his deathbed, but he passed without uttering a single useful word here. So it's kind of one of those things he kind of took to his grave. Whatever he knew or potentially knew, we'll never know.
We'll never know.
By the end of 2004, Marjorie was determined as knowing the difference between right and wrong, and therefore declared competent and able to stand trial. So she went from high IQ to depressed and bipolar to not
like
fit to stand trial.
Like a savant in a way,
yeah.
I think. Like really so high... You know, high processing in one area, but maybe to the detriment of other areas in her life.
There you go. Instead, on January 7th, 2005, she pled guilty to the murder of James Roden and was sentenced to 7 to 20 years in prison. You just have to wonder how the state could flip-flop on this particular piece of information. How does one go from mentally disabled to being able to tell the difference between right and wrong?
Right.
I mean, she had all of the signs here that she knew what was going on.
Also, doesn't it seem... Do you think it's the fact, and this is just me posing a question, because we always pose these, like, trial questions,
yeah.
and maybe our lawyers have something to say about it,
yeah,
but if she pled guilty to the murder, 7 to 20 years seems pretty small.
Low, right? Yeah.
Considering all the other sentences that we've sort of talked about, even in second-degree murder, where they at least
get
in the 20s for possibility of parole, this just seems kind of... Like, she got off easy.
I completely, especially when, you know, she has a history of violence. She was, you know, she didn't get convicted for the 6 shots,
right,
but she still did it.
It's
That's
a theme
true.
In her life. It
yeah.
just seems, I don't know, 7 to 20 years doesn't seem that long. I feel like you'd get that for robbery or
yeah.
something.
Well, investigators interviewed her in July 2005, and Marjorie hinted that James's death and the robbery and bombing were connected, saying, quote, "If I tell you how Roden and Wells are related, that immediately puts me into the Wells case, and I'm not going to do that," end quote. But Marjorie did give up one little detail, a name, Ken Barnes.
So that just adds even more to the story. And again, when John just referenced Wells, we're talking about Brian Wells, which was the pizza delivery guy
yeah.
who had a bomb attached to his neck.
Right, right,
so
right.
she didn't really want to implicate herself in regards to that,
sure,
but gave up Ken Barnes. So okay, who is Ken Barnes and how does he play into all of this? Well, Barnes was a misfit friend of Marjorie's, an odd but smart guy and a retired television repairman. However, Ken was also a crack dealer, and okay, when he was questioned by police on August 11, 2005, he admitted to being part of the robbery bomb plot.
Interesting.
Ken told investigators that Bill built the bomb and that the robbery was Marjorie's idea. They asked Ken to help with the timing mechanism on the bomb. Okay, so that sort of, yeah, brings in the movie aspect of it.
Right.
The weirdest part, however, was Marjorie's reason for wanting to rob the bank. Ken said Marjorie wanted to rob the bank in order to kill her father to get an inheritance.
So this is getting...
But, you know, here's a detail I'm not quite sure about. Because,
sure,
like, was her father in the bank? Like, what... Like, how does he have to anything to do with the bank?
And
this could just be her mental disorder, thinking that they're connected and not. I think...
That's true.
Because when I first read this, I was like...
Yeah, how do they place that?
Well, why
that?
Would she rob a bank to kill her dad?
Right, right.
What... Why do... any one of those things, but we sort of later learned that this didn't shock her father.
Yeah.
To quote him, I don't think she's completely sane. We actually don't know how much the inheritance was worth that she would get, but it just seems...
It's a very good point, yeah.
How does that relate?
I mean, what if the dad was meant to be the guy...
Or in the bank at the time.
Yeah.
It just brought
or
up
the
a
guy
lot
with
of questions
the bomb on
for
him.
Me. Yeah. It brought up a lot of questions of how that's even related.
Right. Well, anyway, let's get to Marjorie standing trial on October 12, 2010. She stood trial for the robbery and bombing. Jason Wick, ATF special agent, called it, quote, the most bizarre case I've ever been a part of, end quote, which... That makes sense.
Yeah.
This is the most bizarre podcast we've
That's
ever
what
been
I was
a part
say.
Of. The prosecution sold Marjorie as the catalyst for the entire robbery or bombing, despite Bill building the bomb and her clear mental instability and the fact that her father had described her as gullible. Ken pled guilty. We're getting a chocolate incoming.
Chocolate garnish.
Here, I'll bring it over here, Matt, so you don't have to walk around. Matt's using the garnish.
He's using a butter knife now.
Yeah, interesting. Oh.
Which could be a murder weapon.
The knife was a little bit too close to my face.
It was very close.
I don't
he was
know.
Flicking in it.
I think he was insinuating. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ken pled guilty to his role in the conspiracy and was sentenced to 45 years in prison. And on the stand, he testified against Marjorie, telling the court that she was the mastermind of the plot and planned to kill her father in order to inherit his money. Again, this goes back
Doesn't
to the
sentencing. Doesn't it seem crazy
sentencing.
That she gets 7 to 20 and he gets 45? Like,
when he wasn't even the one that was masterminding it.
It must have been the evidence presented, but
yeah,
it just seems like such an odd... When I read 7 to 20, I was like...
And this is another theme through all these
if
verdicts.
Matt kills us, he only gets 7 years?
7 years? I mean, that's crazy. We're worth more than that. Yeah,
we're worth way more than that.
But this is another theme I keep bringing up on the show. The people that are actually the ones
right
behind this and or pulling the actual trigger get less time.
So it's bring in more people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get less.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Ken knew this because he was going to be the one killing her dad, but for the fee of $250,000.
Again, a recurring theme here, $250,000.
That's what led Marjorie to come up with the bank robbery plot. There was conjecture by both police and prosecutors that Brian, again, the one who was blown up, was somehow involved in the early stages of the robbery plot.
So let me just bring this into it because I'm curious to see what you think about
okay
this, considering you didn't really know how the banking and the robbery
yeah
turned out. So if Ken was the one who was going to kill her dad and he said he would do it for $250,000.
Right.
She must have commissioned Brian
That's what
to
I was
steal
thinking
the money
yeah, yeah
to pay Ken to kill dad to get inheritance.
Wow, that's very...
Is that what we're
I'm
thinking?
I'm impressed. I was thinking that, but I didn't connect the dots and couldn't say it the same way, but I think that's what I would assume is going
that's
on.
That's what we're all thinking.
Yeah, that's what
okay
we're all thinking.
Okay.
Or at least you and I and maybe Matt.
Matt doesn't think.
Okay, fair enough. Fox News wrote that authorities believed he may have even taken part in the talks about wearing a fake explosive device, but in the end became an unwilling participant. Again, that's kind
Again,
of what I was thinking in the beginning of the episode.
It's not a fake explosive device because I saw it.
Right. You've
yeah
seen exactly what happened.
Yep.
Philly.com says prosecutors had a witness, a prostitute, who alleged that Brian often paid $15 to $20 to have sex with her at Bill's house. So there's a connection there as well.
Yeah.
In his testimony, Ken also admitted to helping place the bomb around Brian's neck and that he and Marjorie had followed Brian to the bank watching from a vehicle parked across the street. So, you know, it's weird to think about. I mean, it's sad, but you know, you picture him going into this bank, he has a bomb on him, and then thinking that they're just, you know, in a car right outside the street.
Knowing all of this was going on. And
yeah.
Also, by the way, just to bring everything back, like, we don't really know why he had a shirt on that said yes.
That's what I keep wondering. All these details.
I never read anything that related to it.
Was he meant to sort of, like, lift his shirt to the teller?
Or, like, guess what it is? Like, right. A game show? Like, I was very... It was such an odd detail to know, like the lollipop and the guest thing. Like, right. It made it even more creepy because I never read anything in our research about what the shirt had anything to do with it.
Exactly. I agree. Post-robbery, Brian was supposed to give the money to Bill, but he obviously got stopped by police en route, as we mentioned. Ken, however, claimed that that killing Brian was always part of the plan. So it does think...
It was always a real bomb, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was always going to detonate.
It was always going to detonate, exactly.
Oh, that's so sad.
It is sad. This poor guy, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say poor guy. He was part of a huge crime here, but it's just weird to think that no matter what was going to happen, he was going to blow up at the end of the day. According to Ken, Marjorie also killed James. Remember, he was her ex who was found in Bill's freezer. Because he threatened to tell police about her plot. During the trial, Marjorie was easily agitated. She'd interrupt while Ken was testifying to say things like, "You're a liar." Ken's testimony was questionable as his 45-year sentence was reduced to 22 years, but the prosecutors also called Marjorie's past prison inmates to the stand, who also testified that she bragged about killing her boyfriend and said that she did it to keep him quiet about the bomb plot. These details got her the nickname Freezer Queen in jail.
Which is why I wanted a cold martini.
And that's what we got. Let's cheers one more time.
Yeah, a 700-pound cheese martini.
Ultimately, the defense relied on Marjorie's mental illness in making their case. Suffering from narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, paranoid personality disorder, and bipolar, the defense argued it was impossible for Marjorie to be behind the plot. They said because of her disorder, she wasn't able to keep secrets and was predisposed to bragging and blabbing.
But, like, also reading all of the things that she was diagnosed with, it sort of seems like almost counterintuitive. Like, she
I agree.
Has, when I was reading this and... like, I was a neuroscience major in college, so I know a little bit about all these disorders, and I have friends who suffer from some of these things, and it's just like
same.
One person having all of these things seems...
way too coincidental.
It seems so much.
Yeah,
like, it's almost conflicting.
Yeah,
like,
I
how
agree.
Can you have all this? I mean, I guess it's possible, and I'm not a doctor in any sort of way, but to know that one person has literally, like, every mental disorder that you could possibly have.
Well, and then let's get in. I mean, let's bring this back at the end of the episode, because I do want to talk about, okay, yes, you have mental issues.
Right.
Is that a license for you to go around killing people?
Like, right.
I don't know. I think that's an interesting conversation that we should talk about sometime.
Sure.
On the stand, Marjorie gave a long and rambling testimony. She said the investigator set her up and that the government framed her and that Bill was the true mastermind.
Who passed away.
Right. He was the one that had cancer. She said that Bill meticulously planned the whole thing and made sure Marjorie was situated in locations through the whole thing that would implicate her. Marjorie claimed Bill framed her because he had always been in love with her and he wanted her behind bars so that no one else could have her.
That's a really easy... I mean, I guess it's possible. I guess we'll never know because it's a lot of TBD here because he passed away not uttering sort of any sort of conclusive word, but it seems so... Perfect,
exactly. Well, let's get to the verdict.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting, too.
So the jury reached a verdict on November 1st, 2010, not too long ago,
finding
Marjorie guilty. She was convicted with conspiracy to commit bank robbery with the utilization of a destructive device, and she was sentenced to life in prison on February 28th, 2011. She earned another 30 years for using a bomb in the crime. Actually, the sentence would begin as soon as she finished serving her time or was paroled for killing James Roden. So it's safe to say for probably the rest of her life.
She's
in prison.
Yeah.
Marjorie accepted the verdict very calmly, apparently. She's in an all-female prison near Fort Worth, Texas. Brian Wells – here's what's really interesting, though. Brian Wells, who was a pizza delivery guy –
The
one that blew up. Brian Wells' family apparently also believes Marjorie was manipulated, and the true killers are unpunished, which when I read that fact –
Yeah.
And when I read what they thought, I don't know. The fact that the family won't even, it really made me open my eyes to, like,
yeah,
perhaps Marjorie in some way could possibly be telling the truth in some sort of mastermind scheme, considering her mental disorder, disorders, but the fact that Brian Wells' family doesn't think that Marjorie was part of it.
It definitely says a lot.
It's crazy.
It also says that there are some details that maybe we don't know, potentially.
That haven't been investigated on, because if I was a member of the family, I'd
Why else would you think that?
She's been convicted. We know this. This is.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Let's get part of it. But if they think she was manipulated, there might be more to the story than you and I know.
Yeah. Well, let us know what you guys think. That was a really weird, topsy-turvy story. It's crazy how everything goes. It's also an episode of Snapped, by the way, from season 12. If you want to know more about it, you can find it on iTunes or somewhere else.
When I was talking to my mom, who listens to Martinis and Murder,
shout out to my mom. Who says my voice is very soothing.
She says it's very soothing. She told me at dinner.
Thanks, Mom.
Not so much.
Not so much. She's also heard your voice for 20-some years.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
She needs a break.
Doesn't get more pleasant after that. But she said, she was like, what more are you guys talking about this week? And I was like, oh, it's so convoluted. Like, I was like, but I'll give you a little tidbit. If you've heard on the news of a guy who blew up, because we could see it on TV now, 14 years later, of a guy blowing up. And she was like, that sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't remember. Because I figured, I mean, in 2003, I was 15. I probably wasn't watching the news avidly. But if she could, this must have been a story.
Well, and also, you know, you're from New Jersey, New York area.
Yeah.
And this Erie, Pennsylvania is not that far away. I'm from Maryland. That's
but
not far away.
But if a pizza guy had a bomb attached,
no,
you'd
of course.
Expect.
Regardless of, it would be national
you'd
news.
You'd think it'd be national
it's
news
a snapped
in some
episode.
Sort of way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'd think it would, and she was like, that sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't really know. And so.
Had she seen the movie with Aziz Ansari? That they kind of used as the storyline.
My mom's more of like an indie film.
Oh, okay. She's not watching Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, no, I don't think
so. Jesse Eisenberg.
No. I mean, she's cool.
Yeah. No, look.
She's cooler than
She's a cool mom. She's a cooler than
like
that
she knows
mom.
Who Matchbox 20 is.
Yeah, her first concert was not seventh grade. It was like fifth grade.
Yeah. Well,
so in your face,
actually,
mom.
Actually, you know. I think I asked my mom what her first concert
there
was.
There you go.
Mine probably was with my dad.
And just make sure that it's part of the show next week. So
what
we
was
can,
your first concert?
I didn't want to like mention this. My first concert
was mentioning it.
A country concert, and it was Willie Nelson. And I got a picture with him
That's
when I was like
thing.
Fifth grade. I know. My grandmother knew the people that like ran the concert or something, and we got to like go to the concert. And
I love
him.
Willie Nelson.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Wait,
he's
Matt,
a,
what
he's
was
a
your
legend.
First concert? Oh, yeah, the Sex
Johnny
Pistols.
Ran the
I forgot
Sex
that. That's what you said. Mine was The Who.
That's right. Yours was The Who. I
but
remember
I fell
talking
asleep.
About this.
But that's not important.
That's not important.
That's
a different show.
That's a different podcast.
Let's get to some listener shout-outs. You guys are cracking us up on Twitter.
Oh my God, I died.
Every Monday I get so excited because we post the show late on Sunday. We talk about we promote it on Monday morning.
We email Matt.
We email
we're
Matt.
Just like, look at this. Hello.
Somebody sent us this. Somebody sent us that. These are so funny. You guys are so funny. Why don't you take the first one?
So a former quote unquote biggest flirt
as
we were
last
naming
week,
a high school superlative.
Last week's episode.
Came out to support me after last week's episode. Keisha on Twitter says, quote, former biggest flirt here in my case, it was more like the biggest tease. Ooh,
and I was like,
I wish I went to high school.
I was
going to
say, was she like hitting on you a little bit? Maybe a little bit of social.
She definitely wasn't.
Okay,
because I'm
to
terrible.
Know.
I wish you were, though. I just
love that after we mentioned you being a biggest flirt on a recent
Excuse
episode.
Me, I was cutest couple.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cutest couple.
Yeah, I was cutest couple.
People came out of the woodwork and wanted to make sure they knew.
I thought about this and I looked back at my picture from high school.
You did.
And my ex-boyfriend, James. Me, my one and only,
had
his hand kind of in my back pocket,
oh.
which in high school was like a big thing.
A huge, that's a big deal.
So I'm immortalized.
Oh, you mean actually whenever you would walk with
the
back.
He was like grabbing my tush. So I feel like I'm immortalized as like, you know, I'm really the high school slut.
Well, you know, and looking back now, look where we are, you know.
I know, now my girl's grabbing my butt. It's
We've come a long way.
We've come a long way.
KM on Twitter says, oh God, I forgot about this
I
one.
Love this.
The cackle busting out of Jay Thrasher on Martinis and Murder every week actually makes me LOL. Such a great laugh.
I agree with you,
Thank
KM,
you,
because
KM.
His laugh makes me just warm on the inside.
By the way, I responded to her and I said, this is just my inner witch coming out, the way.
It's your Harry Potter.
Ooh, I love that even more. Take another one here.
Stephanie on Twitter says, hashtag Martinis and Murder is everything. Knife emoji. Martini emoji. Watch out, Matt is probably not on vacation. Hashtag Matt is behind you. Hashtag Cocktini, which is better than my concoctatini. That's a shout out to you.
To me, because I kind of messed that up last week when I only had like one sip of a martini. Amelia on Twitter says, listening to Martinis and Murder and wishing Jay Thrasher and Carpe Darren had tied up this loose end since Google isn't telling me anything. She then included a screenshot of her typing, "Is Pamela Smart's dog okay?" on Google. This was hilarious.
This was hilarious.
She later did a little of her own investigation. She discovered that the dog was okay. And then an hour later tweeted us again and was like, wait a minute, that happened 20 years ago. That dog's definitely dead. I'm sad again.
We don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know.
It could be like that. It could be time traveling.
Allegedly dead.
That's, there you go.
I think the lawyers would make us say dead. That because we don't know. And to be honest with you, what's really funny is like both of you and I are animal lovers.
We are, yeah.
I'm surprised
that this didn't come up.
None of us said this, that like that was the moral of the story. In
fact, I know.
What is your moral of this whole murder that we discussed today? What do you think?
The moral of the story, I would say, is to always check to make sure your pizza delivery guy doesn't have a bomb on
him.
Okay.
Oh,
I think
that's
a really good thing to
keep
in mind.
Mine is probably, oh my God, there's a lot. Like, maybe don't take dum-dums from a bank.
Okay, fair.
If you have 700 pounds of cheese, eat it.
Eat it.
And, like, you know, don't order two pepperoni pies at the same time.
Right, order four.
Because we're just going to implicate you.
Exactly, and order four.
Yeah, or like mix it up being like two mushroom pies.
That sounds good. So thank you guys again for your listener feedback. We're going to call them listener shout outs now because I think that's a good, everyone's given us
that's
a shout
out. That's more
fun. Yeah, and feedback. It's not always feedback. It's usually just comments. Continue to do that. Let's be friends on social media.
We both need more friends.
Yes,
that's
true.
I think we can both safely say that.
We need more people that can corroborate that we're not,
like, Matt needs friends, but Matt, you know.
You're just lethal with him today.
I know. Well, he's back now.
You know, we have 2 weeks worth of show to make up for.
I'm a little drunk.
I am too. I was just thinking.
How drunk are you?
I don't know. I'm like having trouble.
Give me a scale 1 to 10.
I'm not like drunk. I'm just saying it's a little harder to read some of our shout outs here.
How many pizzas do you want right now?
I want a whole pizza to myself. Okay.
I want two.
I'm ordering one from Mamma Mia's Pizza in Erie, Pennsylvania.
It's going to take a while.
If you want to get to New York, if you want to follow us to talk about the latest episodes of Martini's Murder, you can find us on Twitter at Jay Thrasher and Carpe Darren. We love hearing what you guys have to say about each episode, so feel free to hit us up.
With anything and everything, we have been cracking up at work with your comments. Honestly, like,
Mondays are the
John
best.
John and I email each other all the time.
We do.
Include Matt, include all of our like EPs, and it's hilarious. So please do. It's amazing.
And coming up on Oxygen, of course, new episodes of It Takes a Killer air on Fridays at 11:10 Central. And of course, new episodes of 3 Days to Live air Sundays at 6/5 Central and again at 9/8 Central. One other thing I wanted to mention is last week we had talked about the Rachel Wade story.
Yes.
That episode of Snapped will be available on Oxygen Monday, March 27th at 12 p.m. So set your DVRs. If you're listening to this, the first day the show comes out, you might be too late.
March 27th, the
Tuesday. Oh, wait. March 27th. Yeah, that's next
Dick's Tuesday.
Monday?
So it'll be the day after this podcast goes.
So it turns out the 27th is a Monday.
Oh,
you've had one too many drinks.
I meant a Monday.
One too many drinks for you.
That.
So this comes out Monday. If you're listening to this, it might be too late, but if not, set your DVRs for the Rachel Wade episode of Snapped.
God,
we are done.
I'm going to miss you guys. I'm not here next week.
I know. We're doing a special interview episode that I'm working on.
You're going to do a special interview.
Yeah.
We're going to miss you, but we will be back in full force.
Absolutely. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. And that's it for this week's Martini's Murder. We just hit 1 hour.
Thank you.
Perfect timing.
For listening, everyone.
And have a good week.
Shit-faced.
You kind of are. All right. See you guys
John.
Later. I know. Sorry. Bye.
Bye.